For always saying that you're very cold and not, you know, not so into getting all emotional and everything. Last night, getting very inspired by it.
I was?
Yeah.
Where'd you see that?
Up in the front.
How can you see me?
What do you mean?
You see my back.
You know, your head was moving the entire time.
You should know the Baal Shem Tov says that in the highest level of Kavana, it's not moved at all. Says all the shaking around which people do is only because they're trying to get rid of all the bad thoughts in their head. And they're trying to focus. And once they're focused, they should be absolutely still and completely silent.
The reason for the shuffling is to stay awake.
What? That's another reason. I don't know the Baal Shem Tov realized that people need it to stay awake. I know that. We know that's true. But not the Baal Shem Tov. Anyway, so let's finish up the fifth principle. Hi.
Hi.
I'm David.
David from where?
From Germany.
From Germany. So his yeah. buddy?
Yeah.
Okay, very nice. What part of Germany are you guys from? Where's your back?
Freiburg, South.
Freiburg. I'm also from Southwest Germany, but one generation ago.
You were born there?
No, my father was. My father was born in a little town called Bechhofen, from which Beckhoffer comes. If you look at Bechhofen on the World Wide Web, you'll see that it's called the shaving brush capital of the world.
The
shaving brush capital of the world, yes.
So the thing that, they put the powder on
there? The thing they put the, the thing is that they have the a major shaving brush company there. And in fact, before the war, that was owned by Jews. And now, of course, they're not owned by Jews anymore, but... the shaving brush company. Okay. So, we're talking about the fifth principle. The principle is that one can only serve God and no other, right? And we've mentioned, a couple of things about the angels. And if you noticed, I don't know how many of you noted last night in Slichus, but at the end of Slichus there was a paragraph which I don't say because of this principle. And also because sometimes I'm behind, so it makes it easy to catch up. So the second, right at the end, there's a passage which goes, Machnisei rachamim, hachnisu tiloseinu lifnei baal harachamim. Those of, anybody remember that phrase? Is that all familiar? You guys are asleep at 1:45, obviously. What? Those who bring in mercy, bring in our supplications for mercy before the Master of Mercy. So who are we praying to when we say that?
Angels.
Angels. It's only angels who are designated to convey our prayers up to God. Please bring our prayers up to God. So according to Reb Chaim Volozhiner, that's idolatrous. Right? You can't pray to those angels. Because you can only pray, either as we said before, make requests to God or to fellow human beings. Not to make requests to angels. So therefore you have right in the middle of Slichus here, you are trying to do tshuva on your Averis for the entire year, and here you are committing the Aver of Avodah Zarah, right? Every night, every time you say Slichus. I exaggerate somewhat. But obviously, so somebody put it into the Slichus book, and we don't assume it was put into repetitiously by some idolater, some pagan. So the idea is clearly in this tefillah and similar tefillahs, like in the Shalom Aleichem, where we say Borchuni L'Sholom, that the angels should bless us, that when angels are delegated a responsibility, a mission, one can turn towards that angel. In other words, if you don't know that an angel is granted a certain mission, so he's a tool in the hands of God. But sometimes angels are given, so to speak, authority. And then when they're given that authority, it seems, according to those who wrote these prayers, you're allowed to turn to them and ask them to wield their authority in a way which is beneficial to us.
They have authority.
So it seems that they have authority, according to the author of that tefillah, they have authority to convey our prayers. In other words, the angels can decide whether these prayers are worthwhile bringing before our Kodesh Baruch Hu, so to speak, or these prayers are not worthwhile bringing before our Kodesh Baruch Hu. The fascinating negative comment by the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov says, if you come into an old shul, you'll feel lots and lots of sanctity. If you come into a new shul, you don't feel lots and lots of sanctity. So, you know, the simple meaning of that is, of course, the older it is, you know, the more powerful experience, the more people have davened there over the years, you know, and so on and so forth. Baal Shem Tov says, kind of, he a little bit of a negative perspective, he says, the reason why the old shuls feel so holy is because there are many tefillos which have remained there over the years. They weren't worthy of going up to Shemayim, so therefore they remained in the shul. He says, not only that, if you go into an old shul, you'll usually feel that it's somewhat oppressive, right? In other words, there's not so much room as in a new shul, even though it might be exactly the same amount of room, and that's also because all those tefillos all around you are making the room seem tight and packed because, you know, they didn't go up to Shemayim. So the idea, of course, is that one tzaddik who comes to a shul at whatever time the shul's existence, at least according to Hasidus, can then come and take all those tefillos which are lying around on the benches, on the floor, bookshelves, and bring them up to Shemayim so they can activate whatever they're supposed to activate.
But
yeah.
Isn't the Baruch Huni L'Shalom, is that not the same principle as going to a tzaddik and say, bless me for Parnasa or Kala or something like that?
No, the tzaddik has free will. Malach doesn't.
He said Hashem or man.
Right, yeah.
You said you can make requests to Hashem or man.
But it's not so simple. Even when you go to a tzaddik, you can't ask the tzaddik. What do you ask the tzaddik? You say, bless me?
Give me a bracha.
What does that mean, give me a bracha?
I don't know.
So why don't you do it? Have you ever done this?
Somebody said this was a good idea.
Why did you listen to them? Somebody said it's a good idea to jump off the Empire State Building. Would you do that?
He was a yekka for what it's worth.
That makes it even worse, because yekkas who say that you should ask for brachos for tzaddikim are denying their entire heritage. Yekkas don't believe in these things.
Parents giving brachos for their children?
What?
Parents giving brachos.
For example, what is the...
I have no idea. Why do people do it?
Wait, isn't this... I'm sorry. Right. Is this not something that... Is this something that's a heretical idea?
No, if you understand it right.
Okay. I don't understand it correctly.
Obviously. That's why we're here. Second. The Brandon's on the right track. Would you know what the bracha is? Which the parent gives a child?
Unfortunately, my son.
Red question.
Oh. So you know the answer to your question. What does it say? Everybody take a sitter. Let's go. I think they're enough here, but we can share.
I give a bit of help to the
Kohen. Right, okay, so you're doing the same thing. You should know the answer too. What did it say in, where is the page? 354. The blessing is a very short blessing. It's either for a boy, Yisim Chalukim Te Ephraim Chimanashe, for a girl, Yisim Chalukim, Yisimech Chalukim, to saw Rivka Racha Leah, and Yerecha Shev Yishmecha, Yerushem Ponavilecha V'chonecha, Yisrael Hashem Ponavilecha, V'sem Lecha Shalom, the priestly blessing. No. What does it mean? You're asking God, can you, the father, the mother, the tzaddik, if he's giving the bracha the right way, the bracha is a supplication to God to grant blessing to the people who they are blessing. May you be blessed, my son. That's not our religion. Right? You can't actually say it. That doesn't work. Because who says that you can convey blessings? Who made you the deity of bestowing blessings? So the way blessings are bestowed is by that person, right, supplicating Hashem, asking Hashem to give the recipient the bracha, which is how Birkas Kohanim works, right? That's what you have in mind when you bless the congregation. That's what you're supposed to have in mind, to ask Hashem to bring the bracha, and Kohanim are given a special quality that, for whatever reason, they're able to convey the bracha of Hashem, or I shouldn't say convey so much as activate the bracha of Hashem on the community.
But we are not the source.
What?
The person that gives the bracha is not the source of the bracha.
Right, he's not the source of the bracha, right.
One question.
Only one?
Yeah.
No
one.
Yes, for now, yes.
What the Baal Shem Tov said.
What?
That thing that you said about the Baal Shem Tov.
Yeah.
I listened to that when you are with a Sibur, always The prayer goes up. No matter that if a Rasha, if it's a Rasha or...
Yeah.
And that's why in Rosh Hashanah we don't make like...
It's not true. If you have a tzibur of people who are not paying attention to their prayers, it doesn't do very much good. However, the odds are that if you're in a tzibur, that at least one person is davening with kavana, right? We're assuming that at least one person. So his davening with kavana spreads over the entire tzibur because they're all connected to him. But if everybody in the tzibur is thinking about the Yankees, so then you're in big trouble, right? It's still better with the tzibur than alone. Because 10 people thinking about the Yankees is better than one person thinking about the Yankees. But, you know where the Yankees are?
Especially if you have
wages on that.
Yeah. So, but it's really not the same thing as diving with kavana. Even diving with a tzibur is not the same thing as diving with your own kavana. And, you know, like we said by Shechina, there's different degrees of Shechina, so too by tzilos being skabel, by tzilos being accepted. You know, Baal Shem Tov obviously was exaggerating, but the idea is that some tzilos are more miskabel, some tzilos are less miskabel. It's not either or, right? Accepted by Hashem. It's more and less, right? The tefillah can be 50% accepted, 70% accepted, 20% accepted. So when you say a tzibur's tefillah is always accepted, it means more accepted than that of an individual.
But we also said that always when we say a tefillah, it has an effect on the...
Yes, but to accept
the effect. That means that effect is the same, the thing go up to the shamanim?
Yes. That's the same thing. Yeah, they don't go up and tefillahs don't literally have to go up.
Okay. Yeah. So how would the Baal Shem Tov say that if we study that always it has an effect,
but
always go
the
up?
The question is how much? Is it this much effect or is it that much effect?
I wouldn't say that.
But that's I'm saying it now. The effect can be measured. It's not either or. Sometimes we try things either black or white, yes or no. But most things aren't like that. Most things are on a scale. Sometimes more, sometimes less. So, yeah, you had your hand raised before.
No, you covered it.
Okay, yeah.
I understand why Shalom Aleichem is problematic to some people, you know, but like...
I should stress, most people think Shalom Aleichem despite the problems. I've never met anybody who actually doesn't think Shalom Aleichem.
But there are cases of that.
There's one verse that some people omit.
I'm saying, I never actually met people who omit that one verse. Have you?
Yes.
Okay, so you're one up on me. Because I've never met anybody who omits it. Yeah.
I mean, the source for this song is the Gemara in Shabbos apparently, but the way it explains it here that we're basically asking the angels to ask God, may it be God's will that it be so for the next Sabbath. That really is a kosher way to think of it.
Yeah, it's kosher, but it's not in the words. In other words, it's a very strained answer because the words themselves don't say, "Hey, angels, go and ask God." It says, "Give me a blessing." That's what it says.
Me melech malchut.
Maybe.
Did we already bring up...
Yeah. I don't know. That doesn't sound that way because I think Malachi means they're angels of God, not that they should go suffering God, because otherwise the other verses, stanzas, don't make sense.
Would you say again, Rabbi?
I don't think the way you're translating is the right translation. The way you're translating is Borchuni L'shal Malachi.
Oh, right.
So it's not going to work with the other stanzas.
Right.
Yeah.
Did we already draw into this Yaakov asking the angel for a blessing?
No, we didn't speak about that. But you have to bear in mind, Yaakov thought that he was a human being. Yaakov didn't think that this was an angel.
No.
What?
Yeah, he was an angel.
No.
The angel told him I have to go to the shaman to sing.
Yeah, okay, but that's in the morning, right? But all night he thought he was fighting with a man. I think it's not clear to me that Yaakov at that point already knew that he was an angel. My impression is Yaakov only realized an angel when he flew up. Not when he actually, you know, when they had the dialogue.
Why would he ask some random guy his name?
What?
Why would he ask some random guy his name?
We'll meet again.
Why did he ask his name?
He says,
angel said his name, right?
Yaakov
says, I'm not going to let you go, Kim Birachdoni, unless you bless me. And the angel says, Mashmecho, what's your name? He says, Yaakov. And the answer is, Lo Yaakov Yikoreishim Ko, Oh, King Yisrael. Right? Which is actually not a blessing. Right? The angel talked of it in a blessing. The angel gave a prediction. So it's not the same thing. I imagine that Yaakov, asking for the bracha, was asking because he thought it was a human being. Not good?
I don't know, when you try to make it so simple as, oh, he just thought it was a human being and he wrestled with the moment, I mean, the story just doesn't make sense anymore.
It's a tough story. You know, you're right, I never thought of it, I'll be honest with you. I never thought of that issue of Yaakov asking the angel to give him a bracha. It is a problematic thing at first glance. I'm trying to give an answer on the spot. Maybe my answer's not good. But you're right, it is a difficult thing how Yaakov asked. Everybody understand the question?
Yeah.
The question is Yaakov asked the angel after he calls him all night for a bracha, Kim Berachtoni. Right? So the question is, how can you ask an angel for a bracha? You're not allowed to say Brochuni Lashalom. Right? So too Yaakov couldn't say to an angel, Kim Berachtoni, unless he gave him a bracha. So, it's a good question. Yes.
Is the idea of,
Yaakov
knew that, I mean, if we accept, like, Rashi's straightforward, that this angel, that this man was Esau's guardian angel, that it was kind of like Yaakov was asking him to concede on the brachas that Yitzchak gave him.
Is that what Rashi says?
I don't know if he said, he definitely said the, Sar Esav part, but I don't know.
No, that he said, that I know, but did he say that that's the...
I don't know.
The Chan Berachtoni?
That's something I'm...
It could be it does, I just don't remember. Let's see what we find out there. You won Stump the Rabbi. I don't know right offhand. There it is. In Berachtoni. Yeah, so maybe that's Takaway Rashi says that. Not bad. Rashi says, Kim Berachtoni, Hodeli ala Brocho Sheberchoni Ovi. Concede to me the blessings that my father blessed me. So according to Rashi, in fact, he did know already there was an angel. He did know. And Rashi is obviously bothered. How can you ask an angel for a bracha? So therefore he says it wasn't a bracha he was asking him for. He was asking him to concede the brachos, to admit that the bracha which Yitzchak gave Yaakov belongs to Yaakov and should not have gone to Esau.
I thought he asked him his name and then he blessed him. Did he ask him for a bracha?
In the next verse, the angel asked Yaakov for his name.
How about the other one?
What?
Okay,
no problem. Let me go because it's dawn. I'm not going to send you away unless give me a bracha. And then he said, what's your name? And he said, my name is Yaakov, etc., etc. So it could be that that's Taqwa Rashi means to say that Berachtoni doesn't mean a little bracha. I see the Rashbam here says, an interesting thing. He says, Berachtoni here means Shetishlavcheni meidcha b'shalom. I'm not leaving unless you send me away in peace. So Shaloya Nizok Vimashinizavakti imcha. That I shouldn't be damaged by that which I wrestled with you. Kiatola Shachar, because now dawn rose, and Ozyoda Yaakov Shumaloch, and then Yaakov knew that he was an angel. So according to the Rashbam, what he's saying is that I guess wrestling with an angel was not such a good thing to do. So therefore he's saying that I want a guarantee that I'm not going to undergo negative consequences by having wrestled with you. And again, I'm not sure why the angel, how that is, but certainly not asking for bracha. I don't really understand how you make such a request from an angel. If you're not damaged already, you're not damaged. Finish. If you are damaged, you are damaged. Pasla. But I guess somehow the Rashbam also clearly is trying to deal with the question as how can Yaakov ask for a bracha from the Malach? The Malach is not permitted to give a bracha on his own. I don't see offhand anybody else who deals with the question. That was a good question. Okay, so I think that's what Rashi and Rashbam are trying to do offhand. So the one, but another possible answer for all of these things, again, as I said before, is let me backtrack a minute. The way the art school tries to explain it, and the way Rabbi Weinberg explains on the handout, is that you're not really asking the angels for a bracha. See, he says that those who do sing this popular prayer on the Sabbath should envision a situation in which the angels will have to bless him. The Talmud relates that returning home for after the Sabbath services Friday evening was accompanied by two angels. If upon entering one's home, the angels find the table set for the Sabbath meal, they are forced to bless the home with a blessing that this joint preparation should occur the following week as well. It is for this situation where the angels must bless him that one should pray. In other words, again, like the article said, you're putting into the word, you're putting a line into the word, but you're saying, I'm davening that the situation in my household should be such that the angels will be compelled by God to bless me. I'm not asking the angels to bless me. But what I was proposing before is somewhat different, which is that angels are granted authority. When they are granted authority, then you can ask them, make requests from them. And this is not just my position. There's obviously many commentaries say this, that when angels are granted authority, then in essence they have a certain degree of power which they were granted and delegated by God, which they can exercise. So therefore one can make a request from them. So that's very limited. There are two where, in fact, there are only two places where we know that that exists. We know that exists by tefillah. You can ask, or we see that exists because we have these tefillos like Machnisei Rachamim, in which we ask the angels to convey our prayers, and we see that it exists by Shabbos. And perhaps, from this perspective, when Yaakov knew that this was Esau's angel, perhaps he understood that Esau's angel was delegated the capacity to be able to concede the blessings to Yaakov. Right? Now I'm going along Rashi, but taking it a little bit further. That if the angels had the capacity to concede those blessings. Why so? Because we know the Chazal tells us that each and every nation, except for the Jews, has a Tsar, has a angelic force which is in charge of it in the heavens. So what's the purpose of having such an angelic force? Perhaps the purpose of having such an angelic force is that that angelic force has authority over that nation. And therefore, if you subdue that angelic force in some way, shape, or form, perhaps then you can ask that angelic force to give you a blessing which has to do with the situation. Again, you know, I don't know if that's good, I don't know if it's true or not true, but that's how I would answer it. So in any event, that's your bottom line is that a person is really not supposed to pray to angels except in very, very limited capacity. This, again, is very un-Christian, because in Christianity, of course, particularly in Catholicism, then they pray not just to God, not just to Mary, which is a big thing, but also to saints. You're allowed to pray to all the saints, and that's why they have saints' days, in which each saint has his own, own fiefdom, his own day, which was his own segment of the world in which he's in charge, and therefore they daven all the time, not just to God or to other members of the Trinity, but to all sorts of other minor dignitaries. I think part of the reason the Protestant Reformation occurred is that they didn't like this anymore. They didn't like even the prayer to Mary, but certainly they didn't like this whole business with the saints.
But saints are not angels.
Excuse me?
Saints are not angels.
Saints are not angels, that's true.
It's
but
like the term that they ask Abraham to a tzaddik.
No, but they're dead. And this is an important point to make.
When we go to the
Gra. Oh, I was about to get there. Okay. It's an important point to make. The Gra was very much, the Vilna Gaon was against going to cemeteries. He held that people should not go to visit cemeteries. Why? Because he held that people go to cemeteries actually daven, very often daven to the dead people. In other words, people go, let's say, to the famous kever in Eretz Yisrael, the kever of Yerushalayim and Uziel. Rabbi Yerushalayim and Uziel's kever in Amuka is famous. People go there for shiduchim, right? People go there because it's uniquely qualified to provide people with the spouse which they seek. So once I heard a joke, the reason why it works that way is because the girls leave their sidurim with their phone numbers in it, and therefore the boys who come know who they can call and find the shidduch, right? But who's available? But, in fact, if you go to Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel's kever, and you ask Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, Rabbi Yonasan, can you give me a shidduch? That may be the same idolatrous practice as praying to the angel. Because Rabbi Yonasan can't grant you a shidduch. You can't do that. If you go to your deceased grandfather's grave and you say, Zaidi, I need $1 million. Can you please give me $1 million? So that's also idolatrous. I was once at a levaya, unfortunately a father who died young and left young children, and one of the people who got up to give a spaden said that he obviously he didn't realize what he was saying. He he was trying to console the children. And he said to the children, you can still talk to your father, you can still pray to your father, he hears your prayers. And he went out from there, but that's idolatrous. You can't pray to your dead father. You can try and schmooze with him, right? Tell him what's going on, but you can't actually pray to him. Now, why is that? Because the dead person has no authority to grant your request. So the tefillos, which are said in the presence of a dead person, presence of a grave, are supposed to be structured that you ask the dead person to be a melech yosher. That's the language they use. To be a good attorney or a good, what's the word I'm looking for? A good pleader. I don't know if there's a good, better English word for that. Advocate. Good. A good advocate before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, he himself, of course, can't grant your request, but he can ask Hashem to grant your request. Now, the question is, well, does the dead person asking on my behalf do any more than my asking on my own behalf? So maybe yes, maybe no. Certainly if it's a great tzaddik, there is some possibility. But one is never allowed to ask the dead person to grant a request. One can only ask the dead person to go and supplicate to advocate before God that a request should be granted. So therefore, the Gra held people don't know to make that distinction. It's a very fine distinction. And he said, better not to go to cemeteries, because you're always in danger of davening the wrong way when you go to a cemetery. So that really is exactly this point, that one has to be very careful, especially, you know, before Yom Kippur, many people have the minute to go to Kibbutz Tzaddikim, Kibbutz Tzaddikim. I see here in the Beit HaKvaros, there are lots and lots of people who go. So the Rebbe Nitzer's Kever. So you can't go to the Rebbe Nitzer's Kever and say, hey, Rebbe Nitzer, can I have a shidduch? Right? It doesn't work that way. You can go to the Rebbe Nitzer's Kever and say, Rebbe Nitzer, you have a tremendous amount of schus. Obviously, in the Olam HaEmes, you're very important. Can you, in the world of truth, the world upstairs, can you please ask Hashem to grant me X, Y, Z? That would be what you're able to do. Yeah.
It's kind of like, I don't know, you know, like you want to raise on the job, so like you ask like the vice president, can you put in a good word for me?
Right, that you can do.
Instead of like saying, asking the boss directly for a raise.
Right, that's exactly what you can do, right. That's using them as a male situation as opposed to asking them. And that's really what you're doing for the malachim. The malachim are your melitze yosher. They're also advocates. You're saying to the malachim, listen, you are granted authority to deal with our prayers. So can you please advocate our prayers and, you know, so to speak, push them to the front. So that you're allowed to ask, but not that the malach grants you what you want, such as in terms of slichas. Slicha, mechila, kapora, forgiveness, the malach should just convey your tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? It's a very fine distinction. It's not so easy to make. So, getting back to the idea of the bracha of the tzaddik. So therefore, the idea of a bracha of the tzaddik is not a simple matter. It has to, the tzaddik, we assume, is one who doesn't have the right to bestow brachas on his own. The Gemara in Tainus, speaks about this. The Gemara beginning in Tainus says that Elio Hanavi was granted certain keys. Anybody familiar with that, Kumar? Says he was granted the key of rain. The key of rain means to turn the rain on and off. And then he was granted, I forget what the second key is, and then he asked for the key of Chiyas HaMeitim, because he wanted to bring back to life the boy who died, right? So Hashem said, I forget, there are three keys, and I forget, first he asked for the key of pregnancy. He turned off the rain, then he asked for the key of pregnancy to make this woman pregnant. And then he asked, when the woman's child died, sometime after being born, he asked for the key of Chiyas HaMeitim, the key of, you know, resurrecting the dead. And Hashem said, no, you can't have all three keys at once. Got to give back one key before I give you the third key. So then Elio gave back the key of rain, and then he got the key of Chiyas HaMeitim. It's a very strange Gemara. But it seems that the giving of the key to Elio means that now you could actually ask, at that point, Elio, at that point you could actually ask Elio, can you please make it rain? Right? Because he had the authority to make it rain. That's what it means, granting of the key. So therefore, if the key is granted to a malach, it usually isn't. But if a key is granted to a Malach, then you can ask the Malach something as well. And a good example of that, was by Lot. Lot was asked the Malach, and he said, can you please let me go, not up to Avraham Avinu, right, when he was fleeing from Sodom, he wanted to go up to Avraham, Malach said, go run to Avraham Avinu. And he said, please don't make me run there, because I can't go there, whatever reason, the simple meaning of the psukim is because it's difficult for me to get there. Rashi says it's because if I go to Avraham Avinu, and I live by him, then I'm going to be considered a Rasha again, because I was a tzaddik versus the people of Sodom. But versus Avraham Avinu, I'm going to be a Rasha, right? So whatever the reason is, the Malachim granted his request. They said, fine, you go to the city of Tsoar and stay there. So you know, how did Malachim have the right? Tsoar was one of the cities which was supposed to be destroyed. It was one of the five cities of Sodom. What right did they have to decide that it shouldn't be destroyed? So you could say they asked Hashem, of course, but it sounds from the Psukim that they made the decision on their own. So it could be how they made the decision on their own, because they were delegated the authority to destroy the cities. And therefore they have a certain amount of leeway in which they can exercise, and that's why Lot can make a request of them, and that's why they could grant the request. Nevertheless, it's brought down that the Malachim, who Yaakov saw, one of the Midrashim says, the Malachim Yaakov saw going up the ladder, you know, in his dream, were the Malachim who were sent down at the time of the destruction of Sodom, and they were punished that they have to stay out of Shamayim, I think it was 120 years, because they said, Kimashchisim anachnu lefa'ir. Because they said to Lot, we are destroying the city. And the Medrash says, that they can't say that. What do you mean? If they're delegated, their immediate responsibility, it's not them, right? That makes it sound like angels are doing this on their own. So it's true, they're granted authority, but it's not their initiative. So for having said, we're destroying the city, they're kicked out of the heavens for 120 years. Okay? It's a fascinating medrash. Now, I really want to finish the fifth principle today, so we can start the sixth principle tomorrow. So let's turn to the second page of the handout. It's in the third page, really. Number three on the top. So actually, the part I have in a little box, you see that Hebrew part, the Hebrew page. The Hebrew page I have in the box is we already did, because that's talking about that story with Menashe we spoke about last week. But I want to do something actually on the top part, which speaks about the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. And he says a fascinating thing here. The Torah actually forbade making images, right? The only image we have, which is very problematic, is the Kruvin, right? The cherubs on top of the Arum. It's a very problematic thing in Judaism.
The what?
The Kruvin on top of the Arum, these little birds, bird-like angels. So it's a very problematic thing, how Hashem even allowed that. And in fact, when the Goyim entered the Beit HaMikdash to destroy it, it says that they saw the Kruvim and they said, these guys are a bunch of hypocrites. They claim they have no idolatry, and here they have these images here. So it's a big problem. It could be a big problem, not for today. Okay, some other time. But he says, other than that, we're not allowed to have any images whatsoever. Right? Which is, of course, a bummer, because it's difficult for us then to relate. We have no physical manifestation of our God, you know, nothing we can venerate. You know, if you have other religions, like we've mentioned in the past, you have something to venerate that's much more fun, much more exciting, much more real. But we're dealing with this abstract thing, you know, God, as we've said many times, is no thing, nowhere. You know, it's very hard to relate to things like that, right? So it says in Michtam Leo, fascinating idea. He says that right after those three dots there, on the left side of the page, Yesh b'zeh yisod b'kochos ha-nefesh. Rav Dessler says that there's a fundamental principle here in the powers of the soul. Kama tikshoy, how stupid, are shar inshar other people, the kaimei kamei sefer Torah rise in front of a sefer Torah, when they see a Torah go by, v'lo kaimei kamei gavar rabba, but they don't get up when they see a distinguished person walk by. Kachu koach ha-nefesh gam hayom. This is a power in the soul even today. Mitchila mishtameh sha'odam b'kli. Initially, a person uses a tool. Leman limod mimenu es apnim. Knowing that he's got to come from the tool to the inner essence, to the core. Umechabi b'kli, and he venerates the tool, they cover that panemius from the medus metu, because the honor of the idea, of the inner idea, which is to learn from the tool. But, Avul Batois, at the end, Nid Melo, he starts believing, Shakri Atmo Rakdusha, that the tool itself is the holiness. Voso Mechabeid, and he honors the tool, that Apnim Shokheh Legamre, and the inside forgets altogether. The Zeu, and that's what it means, the Kaime Kame Sefer Torah. People get up in front of a Sefer Torah, Kiyomdom Sefer Torah, because the Sefer Torah is indeed, Hakri Hakri Achisoni, the outer tool, Shenikam Yomodi Menu, from which you can learn as the Son is born of God's will. There's a Kriya Zero Adam Be'ena B'chush M'chabdo. And this tool is very useful because, again, it's something you can see and venerate, right? Which is why we open the Aron when we daven sometimes. You ever notice we open the Aron a lot? And, you know, it's very strange. You think God is more present when we open the Aron than we don't open the Aron? It's foolish, right? In fact, in some places, if we open the Aron, by Slichus, by Shema Choleinu, right? But there are many places where they don't open the Urim. I shouldn't say many, a few. Because they want people to think, Chas V'Sholom, that Hashem hears better when the Urim is open. You know, there's a wall, and you have to open up the wall, Hashem hears better, right? It's not for that purpose. It's to arouse us, right? Because we're aroused by seeing the Sefer Torah. But he says that, but sometimes this person is supposed to come from that to the inner essence. That's a kriya zeroid on the end of a chushim mechabdo. He sees this tool and gives honor. Avla toich shela Torah, but the inner essence of the Sefer Torah, hamitzgabesh, which takes form, bagavra rabba, a great person, as zei no eve no mechabesh. This he cannot see and doesn't honor. Kein ra'inu beinenu. This is a very powerful paragraph. Kein ra'inu beinenu. So too we saw in our own eyes. Shiyesh anoshim hamechabim et klei hamitzvah. There are people who give honor to the tools of mitzvahs. Ramosha, for example, Osim menorah keset yikara l'chanukah. They make a very precious sterling silver menorah for Chanukah. I've even seen gold ones. Avul einam cheshishim klal, but they're not concerned at all, lizboinei, to consider deeply, b'toichen inyanei Chanukah, the content, the substance of the miracle of Chanukah. And to come to greater belief in Hashem, etc. Because the inner essence, the spiritual essence, remains by them degraded. It's sufficient for them to cause themselves to be mistaken in that which they give lots of value, l'kli ha-mitzvah ha-chitzoini, to the outer form of the mitzvah. Then he says in the brackets that, of course, there's a mitzvah, there's an aspect of zekel v'anveyu, which means we should have do hidur mitzvah. Anveyu means we should give aesthetics to our mitzvah, and that means to embellish the mitzvah by taking a nice etrog, by taking a nice lulav, by having a nice menorah, but that's only supposed to be to make more of an impact on me internally. Because if I see a nice menorah, it's going to make more of an impact on me. If I have a nice menorah because it's going to make more of an impact on my neighbor when he sees my menorah in the window, then that misses the whole boat, right? When I come to shul with my beautiful lulav in the etrog holder, sterling silver or gold, in order that everybody should see, right? That's not the idea. And he says, just to read the concluding paragraph, in essence, to focus on the aesthetic of the menorah in and of itself, or the etrog holder, or whatever, the seder plate, also avodah zarah.
It looks like the World Cup.
It's not, of course, literally idolatry, but it's from the same drive within the human soul to focus on an object to venerate, as opposed to trying to get at the abstract. And that's what he says, it's the same yetzer, the same desire. Shemisito, it seduces him. Vishtamish basura, to use the form, but initially, the yetzer claims, no, it's only to get you. It's a tool. You use it to analyze further. I will say, Yisrael Matsura Vaza. But eventually, it just remains with the outside framework, the superficiality. Because that's what embeds itself in his mind, in the senses. And therefore, in Matthew, you lose the proper emuna. Because the primary content, will be pushed aside because of the vessel. The Kosker Rebbe made fun of us Misnagdim. He used to say about the Misnagdim, the Misnagdim is a non-Kosker. So he said, we Hasidim, we have fear of Hashem. The Misnagdim, they have fear of the Shulchan Aruch. What does that mean? What was he trying to say? Trying to say, we focused on halacha as a system in and of itself, without realizing that behind the halacha is that Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's very similar to what Rav Dessler was saying, that you focus on, you know, the nice Chanukah menorah without thinking about what's underneath. And really, that's what Judaism is all about. Precisely this point of the religion which we have, it downgrades the veneration of objects because we want to compel people to get at the abstract essence. They should consider, think, and grow from what's going on. And the focus on something superficial, it's not avodah zarah in the sense that you're being idolatrous, but it's the same drive which propels people to avodah zarah. Okay?
What about the veneration?
Not one I'm making up, the sixth one.
What about the veneration of the Rebbe?
Veneration of the same idea. Well, it's being denied that veneration of the Rebbe is actually